Well, welcome to Sheep Stuff You Should Know. This is an unfamiliar voice because it's been so long. This is Brian Mahoney, one of the co-hosts of Sheep Stuff You Should Know. And today I'm recording again, and I'm joined by my good friend Dan Makin.
It has been a really long time since we recorded. I can't even remember the last time I recorded.
Yeah, a couple months at least.
Yeah.
I think you and I got one in.
I think we did something last fall, didn't we?
Yeah, but yeah. I don't know. It's been a blur, the whole world.
So. Yes, it has. It has. What's going on down there? You guys are done lambing, right? Or you still have a few trickling in?
Yeah, no, we're completely done. We pull the rams, so we finish by Christmas.
Nice.
We like, because we have a lot of guys that like to go on vacation right after Christmas. A lot of the parties for the guys that work for us, the holidays, the cultural holidays, extend past Christmas into kind of the 2nd of February.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them like to go on vacation around then. So, yeah, but anyway. But and then it's also the other reason why we do it is because we have a bunch of cattle and we have to brand calves. And when we're running lambs and lambing all the way into March, you'd go and you'd try to brand a set of calves, but, you know, you'd have half a dozen or a dozen ewes lamb out. And so then all of a sudden you got to spend 3-4 hours in the morning and it's, you know, 11, 12 o'clock before you can start branding. And so then your good days are limited because it's winter and winter happens. And, so that really freed us up to where now we're actually branding our last set of calves today, but.
Oh, nice.
I mean, there's been times in the past when we were lambing like crazy that we'd be branding all the way up into March.
Yeah, right.
And those are big calves, and we're a little late, especially on some of the vaccines. So
yeah,
nice to be a little more structured that way.
How did lambing end up this year?
It was pretty good. I'm eating some chocolate covered almonds. So apologize to all the listeners.
Well, it won't come through in the recording.
Yeah, we're a third rate, you know, sheep outfit here. You know, you can't expect perfection. So audio quality might be down a little on this. Please leave the negative comments in the comment section.
Send them to Rosie. Send them to Rosie.
Yeah, that's the way to get them read, probably, because I'm not going to read the comment section.
Yeah,
thank you. Yeah, but no, we had a whale of a lambing. We had right about 7,000 lambs born in the month of October.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. We turned out rams on, got my numbers right back here. We exposed on 6,100 ewes. We ended up with 7,500 lambs, at marking. Ended up actually lambing out right at like 5,300 ewes.
Okay.
And so I got three different, depending on who I'm talking to and how competitive I'm feeling, I'll either use my ewes exposed to lambs marked numbers at 121%, 122%. But if I'm feeling like puffing my chest a little bit, I'll drop the 141% lambing crop on ewes going into the barn and lambs going out. If I really want to have fun, I could say like 165 if I want to drop out the dries from lambing, you know, just pretend they didn't exist. But
it's all in how you report the numbers.
Yeah,
who you're talking to.
It really is. Yeah, and it's important to weight that information because you don't want everybody to know everything you're doing. You want them to make sure you leave a little mystery. Keep them guessing.
You are a man of mystery.
Yes, you got to be. Gots to be. Whoa. But no, it was a very good lambing. It was a very intense lambing. You've been to our Goosehaven Ranch and you've seen how we operate there. And so our lambing groups around that place, we usually put 200 to 250 heavy ewes in a bunch. Well, on one day, one bunch lambed out 186 ewes lambed out within 30 hours in one bunch. And at lambing, we have like five bunches around there and plus the others. So I have no idea what the maximum lamb drop per day was at the peak. but we definitely were breaking some records as far as how many sheep we got in and through that system. It brought a lot of challenges. Our death loss was up, especially at that ranch. Mostly because, you know, it's overwhelming and we have to leave stuff out and time in the field. We actually ran out of hobbles at one point.
Wow.
And then we, good story. So we ran out of hobbles and we use this like strip, this leathery, rubbery strip. It's a canvas type thing that we use for the straps. And so I run up to Woodland Draper, and we bought it from there for 100 years, you know, ever since they've been in business and we've been in business, we bought the stuff from them. And apparently they changed management, and we go up there and the guy we normally order from, he's all frustrated and he's like, gosh, dang it. You know, I can't take orders no more. The new management won't let me take orders. And so then finally I get a call back a couple of days later by the new Wheeler dealer owner. And he's like trying to figure out what I want. And I finally explain it to him and I give him an example of everything. And then he's like, okay, I'll get it. And then, so then he delivers it and he gives us enough material to make 20. I'm like, well, this is great. And of course it's crazy time because this is the thick of lambing and I need them. Like, I mean, every day, you know, not having them is dead lambs kind of thing. I mean, it's critical. So I send my guy that runs our feedlot, my foreman from the feedlot, he runs up there to go pick up the material for us and order more. Well, he won't take the order because he doesn't speak good enough English or something. Like, I don't know what it is, but he doesn't trust the order and he can't call me cause I'm in the hills. And so like that night I get a call from him and he's like, I just don't know. I mean, like, what do you, I'm like, I just give it to me. Why wouldn't you take the order? He's got an Amy livestock truck. He's got an Amy livestock credit card. He's got an Amy livestock ID. He's got everything there. And what's someone going to do with hobble strap? Like, you think that's a big theft item? It was just crazy. But anyway, we finally got it all done and we got them all put together and we got through it, but it was a wild couple of weeks there.
But I guess. Why do you suppose the ewes were also synced up? Feed good or?
Well, you know, the number one reason we had so many lambs is because we had so many ewes. We bought out some ewes last year. We got some more ewes. And so that's number one recipe for more lambs is more ewes.
But so, having them all synced up and lambing them in that short a period.
Yeah. So we bought them out of Mojave, and last year the feed that spring was absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. So they bucked up really well down there. Yeah. Our spring was a good spring. It wasn't the best spring, but it was a really good spring. So once again, they were synced up really well because of that.
Yeah.
We wean early. They got a good flush on them. I mean, it was same thing as I remember last year we recorded a podcast in the middle of lambing and I think I said something like, I just never want to do this again. And I just did it again with 2,000 more ewes. So
we call that
and at the worst parts, I'm on record. I can just go to the podcast and listen to it.
I think I mentioned this before, but when we were doing farmers market vegetables, I'd always, about September 1st, I'd be going, come on, just freeze, just kill everything. I don't want to do this anymore. And then the seed catalog would come and I'd be, oh, yay, I'm going to plant this and this. And
it would be so fun.
We all have amnesia.
Garden, kind of cucumbers were the last to ripen. And I picked some like 3 foot long way overgrown just because I gave up. Whatever.
I hold those out like I'm holding a fish, you know.
Yeah.
Like, look at what I caught.
I grabbed a bunch of those and I gave them to the Franciscan friars. I got some buddies who are friars and I gave them a bunch of those cucumbers. Yeah, I think they threw most of them out. They're a little bitter on the edge. I gave them good stuff too. I gave them some lamb chops, stuff like that. But I definitely was trying to get rid of stuff at the end and didn't really care.
Those cucumbers become chicken feed at our house.
Yeah. I really like them though when they're fresh, and dice them up with some fresh tomatoes and onions, a little like, what do they call that, a Romanian salad or something?
I did this white Italian pepper in our garden. It was, I used to call them Vallecito peppers because all of the guys over in Vallecito in Calaveras County would grow them.
Mm-hmm.
And God, I must have pickled, I don't know, 3 dozen jars of them this year. They are so good. They're my favorite. That little bit of cheese and some salami is like the perfect lunch. Perfect lunch.
Yeah, that's good.
Yep. So
yep.
I was thinking today, I want to talk about change, but I wanted to kind of preface it because I know some people know why I was missing in action all of last year, but I kind of want people to know why change is happening for me, if that makes sense to you.
Does to me.
So we're recording this on Friday, January 26th. And exactly a year ago today, my wife Sammy had a CT scan at the hospital here in Auburn that found a mass on her left frontal lobe. And a year ago tomorrow, she had the first of two brain surgeries. And ultimately, we found out that she had been diagnosed with glioblastoma, which is the most aggressive form of primary brain cancer. And 2023 was just an awful year. 202 days after we started realizing she was having something going on, she passed away. And we spent like, I think, 3 weeks in San Francisco in the middle of summer when I would have normally been weaning lambs and rolling with irrigating and stuff like that. And all of that has meant that we're changing up the sheep operation. And I guess one of the things I wanted to ask you about, I guess, how does your decision-making process go when you're thinking about change? And is it a different process when it's kind of change being forced upon you versus something you're proactively seeking to change in your operation?
That's a very light question after a very heavy preface. I appreciate you bringing it up and saying it. It's hard, but it's good to talk about, and it does take effort, and I don't have any words. We've talked a lot, not recording, and
yep.
I don't want anybody to get the impression that by me answering a question, I'm making light of what was just said.
I appreciate that, Ryan. Yeah. I part of my coping mechanism has been to write a lot about that experience, and
which is absolutely beautiful for anybody that didn't, read or look up Dan's blog. They still call it a blog. The online blog. I mean, your writing has improved too, but it's really, really well done. There's some really good stuff and good insights.
Thank you.
But so back to that question of change. Change is always happening. My grandfather always kind of preached that you need to do everything you can to not necessarily prevent the change, but influence it somehow, or not be simply a passive reactor to the change. You need to recognize it when it's happening, step into it, and then try to guide it the best you can one way or the other. I mean, what you talked about there is a broken dam, flooding everything.
Yeah.
And, how are you going to divert that stream? God knows you can't. Yeah. But that doesn't mean you can't, I don't know, my analogies are going to go crazy, but you can't build a little boat and go for the ride and find a way to get to shore. There's ways to still even kind of be an active, aggressive thinker in the midst of a flood. Sometimes that means putting roots down and digging deep and letting the water just spill around you. Sometimes that means going with it for some times, and usually it's like a combination, but I know for us, our changes, I've been absent podcasting as well. I think I have said, and most people know, I lost my grandfather this last, it would have been May 31, I believe May 30th, May 31. But Joe, he died at the end of the month, so he didn't have to renew his hospice care. Simplify the paperwork. So he got it just to the last day. You was very efficient and got every penny out of it for that month. but we had that happen. I also lost my other two grandmas. I lost Grandma Amy in October last year. And then I just lost my Grandma Ruth, who's my last living grandparent, 2 weeks ago.
And,
so it's been a hard year, just family and emotional wise. And then we also got the blessing of having a little feature story in the New York Times about our operation. And that, you know, that there's a lot of change that has come out of that situation that's going on. And just quick summary, anybody can look it up, and it's very complex and it's very hard to talk about. And I'm not going to go into details on everything, other than kind of talking about, like, you know, how we deal with things generally. But there's a group of the venture capital firm was started that wants to build a city. And the heart of the city is right next to our headquarters, which is the Goosehaven Ranch. And over the last 5 or 6 years, they bought up about 60,000-70,000 acres in the Montezuma Hills, and are now moving forward with a ballot initiative to rezone ground and move their city. It's been a challenge and a lot of change and just a pretty crazy story. If anybody wants to look at it, you can look up californiaforever.com. That's their website that they put all their materials onto and things. And so, you know, I don't want to, I rent a lot of ground from them. We work with them. My family has sold ground to them. We have also, you know, we support our neighbors, we support our family, we support our community and stand for those principles too. And we really try to kind of, work that moderate middle ground as best we can in everything we do, including that. And so, you know, that's the main reason why I don't want to get into it, because it's so complex that a little bit really opens up a lot for misinterpretation, a lot of, and just a lot of potential problems that really just would be built out of nonsense. Cause you get on the podcast, I just talk, you know, it's not, this is just talking and reacting to things.
Yeah.
So, your change has been, extremely challenging and difficult. Our change has been challenging and difficult. I mean, the main thing I think that I've really tried to hold on to through all of it is that, you know, there is so much good, there's so much positive, there's so much, there's good with change.
Yeah.
Even the hardness of it is there can be good hidden in it. And you try to seek that out. You try to recognize, like, I think the most important thing is recognizing that it's happening and being honest with yourself with it. Because once you can be honest with what's happening, you can now set up for the next step. You can set up, how are you going to, you know, this company is going to come in, they're going to buy this land, they're going to build a city on Goosehaven. Personally, I love Goosehaven. I don't want to see it turn into a city. There's a reality to the fact that it probably will be. So therefore, I need to realize the reality and not set aside the sadness, but just understand what it is, but realize that this is a reality, and you operate accordingly. So, you know, you operate with an awareness that, you know, we're not going to redo the corrals at Goosehaven. We're going to redo the corrals at the home ranch, because that one, we know we're going to be operating sheep on for a long time. And then even like Goosehaven, like, we're not going to leave tomorrow, because it takes a long time to build a city too. So there's kind of a reality to both. And it's so easy when you latch onto that emotional side of things to give up, right? You know, that's where despair comes from.
Right.
Is when you feel like everything's so big and so overwhelming that there's no way forward.
And you have no control. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the most important thing in dealing with any kind of change, and that's from the smallest to the largest, I mean, your experience is the hardest kind of change that any person goes through. I mean, dealing with death in general, that's what that is it, it's a change, and it's extremely hard, but to recognize that there is a way forward, no matter how terrible everything is.
Yep.
And it kind of takes that ability to step back and recognize that this change is real and actually lean into those hard, difficult realities, right? Like, it's kind of.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that has been challenging but interesting in all of this for me, and I think you and I are alike in this regard, is we do a lot of planning. We kind of think things through. We think through when just as you were saying about finishing lambing so your guys could go on vacation. That's not a decision you made in December. That's a decision you made last March or April, and then plan for all the steps involved in making that a reality. Mm-hmm. And I think when something like illness comes up, you realize that there's a lot of things you can't plan any further out than getting up tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And that's a good reminder. I think ultimately that is a good reminder for me to remember that I'm not as in control as I think I am.
Yeah.
And part of that is wrapped up in faith and other concepts beyond just thinking about a business. But it has also forced me to be open to thinking about how I can be intentional in changing what we do with the sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And why the sheep are important. It's not, as we've talked before, it's not my livelihood, but it is my life. Mm-hmm. And kind of thinking about what that means going forward has been, it's still something I'm thinking about. Go ahead.
You mentioned there's a lot in what you just said. Can you maybe talk a little more or elaborate about how the sheep have helped you understand what you went through? Just kind of how the lessons of whatever you call it, the experience of working the sheep and being a sheep man, how that has shaped your ability to help you deal with these big things in life.
Now, that's a really good question. We may get totally metaphysical.
I'm down. Let's do it. Speaking my language.
That's a great question. I think, during this last year, having something that felt like I was in control of was helpful, because mm-hmm. I wasn't in control of anything else. And so being able to be doing that kind of physical work that it takes to be raising sheep at any scale, I think was really helpful for me. It was helpful also to know that I had a community of friends here that could help me when I couldn't be out there doing the physical work of taking care of sheep. And I think I don't like the cliche of the silver lining, but I think being reminded that there were people who cared a lot about me and my family who were willing to put the work in to show us that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I think the other,
and
we've talked about this a little bit before, death is really hard. Really hard, no matter when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think as ranchers, we have such direct participation in life and death on a daily basis that we get to experience the joy of new life. You just experience the joy of 7,500 new lives,
mm-hmm.
Which is a really important part of why we do what we do. But we're also, death is not necessarily a mystery to us either, in terms of kind of the, I'm not articulating that well, but we deal with that too. And we deal with, it's different when we're dealing with livestock, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think our relationship with that as part of life is different than somebody who doesn't experience what we do on a daily basis. I don't know if that made any sense at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I mean, I can give a stab, at least from my perspective, at what you're. Well, number one, so when I was dealing with grandpa and walking with him through hospice, I was the best gardener I've ever been in my life. I had my little garden in my backyard, and I just that was the, I don't want to say refuge, because it wasn't like I was escaping. It was just that's where I processed, you know, that's where I took a breath and then went back in and kept running the marathon, because
That is a marathon.
you just it's a daily thing, and you go from the interpreting doctor's reports and figuring out some kind of plan to then being thankful that you're cleaning up a mess, you know, or like, you know, it's just like it's amazing how you journey, and the love of growing things that's so central to our being as human persons is, you know, it's that life, it's latching onto that life, and recognizing that it's, you know, it's all part of it. And so we kind of, I think I've always felt that farmers tend to be more faithful or have more faith in whatever religion they believe, but they're more faithful because they're so much more in direct contact with the growing things, with life and death that comes with that. And so we're able to, not everybody experiences it their own personal way, but we understand it differently because we experience it. We understand how it works, and we have a faith that comes, you know, that kind of comes from that experience. Whereas someone that, say, lives in a completely urban environment, everything they've touched, seen, or experienced has been through some kind of man-created, you know, a created controlled environment. The extreme of that's kind of the internet and some of the AI stuff now, you know, where you can almost live your whole life without leaving a house. But it's easy in that situation to not have faith because you don't experience the life, right? You don't experience that growing thing, because experience a growing thing is also experiencing the death of other things. You know, like we have 7,500 lambs. Well, we got a dead ones. You experience both, and I don't know, you're just kind of able to, I don't want to say process it, because that's a scientific term describing a kind of a spiritual event, but it's a, yeah, it really helps, and it's I'm extremely grateful for it, and it's definitely helped me deal with all sorts of things.
Yeah, it has me too. I actually had occasion to speak to a graduate seminar at Davis last, I guess it would have been April, about sheep. And one of the students said, you obviously love what you do and love working with sheep. How do you justify in your mind the fact that your sheep are ultimately going to have to die in order to for you to make money? And I, it was he it was not asking that question negatively. He was asking because it was, I think it's hard for people outside of what we do to understand that that's two sides of the same coin for us. That, you know, it's, we love what we do. We love bringing new life into the world. We'd love, the sheep rely on us. And yet for us to be able to make a living or even make an income from what we do, they also have to be turned into meat. And I think it's important to me to participate directly in that process.
Yeah, and then, and also, because I've been asked that question 100 times over the last 10, 15 years, but and I've matured, I'd say I've matured in my answer, because I've experienced more. But one of the, it's a one, when you run a farm, or especially with sheep, is you sustain or grow a herd with the sheep. So actually participating in running a sheep herd, you actually are growing life, even though you are eating lambs, right? You actually are, you know, you have 3 ewes, they have 6 lambs, you save 2, eat 4, and now you have 8 ewes. And then those eight have more, like it's a growth.
Yep.
And so it's not, you know, it's easy to look at the one that dies and say, well, it's, you know, it's just finite. But then the other side of that is even that death has purpose and meaning, and it's important. It's frankly, it's the foundation for all civilization is food and
it's
water.
Sustaining
all, everything is all part of it. And that's true for the animals and it's true for us. And I also think the other side of it, and depending on the person, the other line I'll go to sometimes is that if you look at it that way, you're simplifying the experience of life to simple math and logic. Yeah. And if you use that equation, then you can easily justify deleting so much of life, because it's just, well, if there's no meaning, and how do you define meaning is another big question. But, if meaning is just being happy and bouncing around and having fun, well, then, you know, I'm going to go ahead and get rid of a lot of people. Right? It's like, let's just go ahead and pretend, let's make them not exist. And, you know, honestly, that's the justification that led to, like, you know, some of the greatest human atrocities of all time, is that kind of thinking. And so it's a fun question to ask a farmer when you're a student, but after you've experienced life and start really thinking about it, you realize that it's a really, it's kind of a sad question that would be the first thought someone has, because it really is a simplification of that human experience, which is to live in story and to live in this state that's so much more above logic. You know, I don't know. That's my thought.
Along with that question, I have been asked on occasion, you know, why is it upsetting to you if you lose a lamb to a predator, or if you have a lamb that doesn't make it through the first week, they're going for meat anyway. Why does that bug you so much? And a friend who has sheep and cows up in Southern Oregon, I asked her that question. She goes, the first time it doesn't bother you when an animal dies is the day you should stop being a shepherd.
Yep.
And that, I think, that's part of why we do what we do, right? And that's part.
But that right there, that's so much of that is, it gets back to what we just started with, that like you gotta recognize the reality of what you're dealing with and lean into it, right? Like you get frustrated that something dies, like don't pretend it didn't happen and be happy.
Right.
Recognize that it died and figure out a way to fix it, you know, or help do everything you can to do it. And it's the same with dealing with these huge things that land in your lap sometimes.
Yep.
You have to realize there's a reality to them, to that. I mean, a cancer diagnosis is real.
Yep.
And there's real consequences to those. And,
yep.
You know, the more you can kind of not run away. Like if you run away, that's the biggest disservice you can do that other person, you know, or that other thing. And the call is to lean into it.
Yep. And I think that's the other piece of kind of long-term agricultural enterprises, right? Mm-hmm. If you're in it for the long term, there's going to be some really bad years and some really hard things that happen. I always come back to your journal of all the wrecks. You know, I think that's part of how we learn. If we're not moving, we're not learning.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we can't control the movement, but we can learn from it, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of the wisdom and kind of that grandpa's point on trying to affect the change and not be passive, but be a passive recipient to it, be an active participant in it. Part of the wisdom is what you just said. I totally lost my thought. It's been happening a lot lately.
Well, tell me about it.
Yeah.
Learning from the, I think I kind of look at that as the process of training a horse or training a dog, that when you're a novice at all of that, when stuff starts to happen too fast, your inclination is to shut it down. Horse starts to buck, you want the horse to quit moving. The dog dives in on the sheep, blows up a group of sheep, you want to get the dog out of there right away. nothing happened, nothing's learned when you try to control everything like that. The horse doesn't get better, the dog doesn't get better, you don't get better at doing it. It's scary to ride through those times, or it's scary to see a dog screw up like that. But embrace that as a teaching moment and a learning moment.
Yeah, I remember what I was going to say. So it's that wisdom, like the when you attempt to actually affect it, it's because you're recognizing what's going on and you're learning from it, right? It's like actually like the wisdom is actually in that learning from and being attentive to why things are happening and looking at the whole picture. And that's the learning. And so it's actually when something's happening, which is what you said, a lot of times, like you have these big things happen to you. You know, answer is the easy answer. And the first answer, most experience is going to be some kind of despair, right? It's emptiness. It's a, oh God, what do I do? I just want to get out of this. But that important step and how you learn is by saying, this is so bad, I just want to be out of it, but I'm going to stay. Going to figure it out. I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to lean into it. Not that you're going to fix it, but I'm going to be here. I'm going to stay. And that's that agriculturalist speaking. Because when the, you know, when a natural disaster comes and takes out of town, takes a month and a half for FEMA to show up, the guys cleaning the streets are the farmers, right? Like that's, you know, that you, it's, let's get to work. Let's figure it out. And that's that first step. That's so important.
I think it's, yeah, it is. And I think it's also important that your grandpa shared those hard lessons with you. I think it's important for us to share those hard lessons with our kids. You know, I think persistence is part of what makes us stick with farming or ranching. I go back, I was having a conversation actually at ASI with somebody talking about their grandpa in sheep and about the several times that he was absolutely dead broke and he stayed in sheep. And I think that kind of persistence and what he obviously learned from those times when he was broke made him a better sheep man.
It's so important to have that persistence and that, whatever you call it, but then also that having that honest conversation with yourself about the realities is, and that's where,
that's a hard part
for me. That's where things kind of get fun. And that's where it gets hard is, recognize, cause it's really easy to do the same thing, right? I need to just keep running sheep because grandpa ran sheep. It's actually, it's easier to do that, but that's kind of a short term, almost a recipe to fail.
Right.
It's that I want to run sheep because I love the sheep. I see the value in the sheep and I want to do it, but then also be open to, I might have to change. Right. I might have to do something different. And that's dictated by all of these factors that can't be controlled. I mean, when you look at like, I mean, just in my situation, you know, I go from, you know, there's a landlord that we had, and I have a rent check from 1917 that we paid to this guy's great, great grandfather. I mean, we've gone back and worked together and lived together for over 100 years. And within 3 years, they're gone. Yeah, we're gone. Like, it's just not gone from the ground, but the ownership's changed and it's totally different. And the plans to build a city.
Totally different relationship.
And, you know, I can be stubborn and stick my head in the ground and say, gosh, dang it. You know, I'm going to just make sure I run sheep forever on this one ranch. Or you say, I want to run sheep. How do I make that happen? And recognize these realities. And so you it's not about winning and losing. You know, we like to simplify things into, you know, if then, win, lose, black, white,
good, bad, evil,
you know, and it's so like everything is like, it's yes to both.
Right.
Is that good or bad? Yeah, it is.
Yep.
It what? It is.
Yep.
It's both. How do we deal with it? That's the question. Like, all right, you want to ask a substantive question. I mean, even like our deal here, when it first started, everybody thought, oh, who is it?
Right.
Who is it? Well, after they had 30,000 acres put together, did it matter? It
didn't matter who it was.
It wasn't, you know, it's, it's fun. And it's fun to see the news and it's fun to get excited. And now all of a sudden you get a name. Oh, I don't like that person. Does it matter? Are they different before than after? Like, no, it's the same.
And what you do if you embrace change is figure out what you can control in that change to continue on the path that you're on business-wise, right?
Yeah, and recognize that you're not in control of it all.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Like, I mean, that's the, you know, all this stuff was happening. We're trying to figure out what's going on and who's who. Who is it? I don't know. Who is it? Who is it? Oh, guess what? Grandma dies.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Wait. That doesn't matter.
What's our priorities? Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just like, man, it just, yeah, things kind of hit you out of left field sometimes, but it's important to be grounded in that. Like, you know, that's what I love about the business, the sheep business and the true agriculturalists. I mean, where the whole world's getting so corporatized, right, or influenced by this kind of a secular business ethic that is really focused on just a short-term money gains. And what I love about agriculture, especially these smaller commodities that have been able to kind of stick around in their form, you know, where there's still a lot of independence, and you see that in sheep producers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see that in beef cattle. Yes. You'll see that in, say probably like actually like grain farmers, especially in the Midwest, those kind of places, like, you know, in some of these commodities, you'll still see it, but, there's the business and the drive, but then there's just this overarching, like almost a moral obligation to each other that comes from that. And so it's that you go and you, somebody gets a car stuck in the mud. And if you're in a farming community, you have to wait 5 minutes and you'll get pulled out.
Yep.
If you're in an urban setting, you have to wait for AAA.
Yep.
And it's just like, that's the difference. And like, it could be the person you hate, but if they're stuck in the mud, you're going to pull them out. You're going to leave them there. And like, that's what I love so much about that.
One of the things that I learned over this last year too, and I think that is part of the community. I think the other part of who we are is that we're pretty independent, self-sufficient people. And sometimes I find that it's really hard for me to accept help. Mm-hmm. I got this. I can do it. Yeah, I don't. You're busy. I don't need you to drop everything and come help me. When something like this happens, and you're part of a community like this, people have this almost physical need to do something to help. And this is not going to come out right, but it's almost a gift to those people who feel that need to help to accept their help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to do. It's really hard to do.
Yeah. That's the final step on the experience in the fullness of love is to be able to receive love.
Yeah. Right. Right?
Everybody to receive it is actually the hardest thing.
Yep.
Because when you receive it, you sit back in humility and receive the love and grace that's been given you in full acceptance without reciprocating it, just a receipt. And that's incredibly hard to do. And it's so rare to find that when you have somebody and you give them a gift, like some whatever, like actual thoughtful, like gift, especially of time or something like that, and they don't return the gift, they don't return something, it's weird to like, even as a gift giver, like it's weird.
Yeah.
It's shocking. And that I think that's one of the most beautiful parts of an experience like you just went through. And the experience with my grandpa was that, especially my grandma, I'd say more than anybody, like that, her ability to receive the help of others was absolutely, it was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And it's so hard, but it's a different, it takes love to a different place.
Yeah, it does.
You experience it that way.
It absolutely does. To jump back in on the business side of things, something you were talking about made me think about something I did over the holidays. I drove, on a much, much smaller scale, but I drove and looked at all the different properties that we've grazed in the last 10 years that I could walk the sheep to. that I don't take them to anymore. And it was, I was kind of sad about it at first. And then I, as you were talking, I realized that's really cool that our sheep were part of that bigger community. Our sheep were the reason that people who may never have been around livestock at all got some little inkling about what it takes to raise livestock. Because we were able to take them to all these different places and graze for people. And I think that's, you know, understanding that that's always going to change, especially maybe more so with sheep, because we are so portable. Embracing those opportunities, but also knowing that those opportunities at some point go away. That it's always going to change.
Yeah, I mean, change is inevitable, right? Yeah. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that happens with affluent societies as we get more and more affluent is we begin to, well, we continue to pretend like we control it all.
Right.
You know, to the point where now if a natural disaster happens, you can sue somebody and blame them for it.
Yeah, like, right. Right.
Come on, really?
Right.
Like, I don't know. You're gonna sue PG&E because the volcano goes off?
PG&E, come on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I get the anger, but it's like that's ridiculous. Like, come on.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Like, yeah. Oh no, a tsunami. Oh, let's find somebody. Like, it's just.
Exactly.
But that wanting to blame someone, like that, seeking that, like that comes from, if you want to strip the philosophy back in what exactly is happening, it's impossible for a disaster of that magnitude to come from a creator, right? Like that didn't just happen. That somebody's right. fault. Somebody did something right. to create that. And right. so there's actual, like, that's where it's from. And so they're seeking out who can we blame to be able to justify our, you know, or come to terms with the fact that this happened, rather than that farmer that I lost 200 lambs in that big giant rainstorm in October that happened to create the greatest feed year ever. And right. healthiest lamb crop and lowest death loss for the whole season I've ever had. So like, it's a, right. you know, what, like, I can't blame anybody from that. Like, right. I can't, I'm going to blame Hawaii for pushing the Pineapple Express up this way. Like, it's, you know, as a farmer, you receive these challenges, you learn from them, you try to build your infrastructure to manage it. And sometimes things happen and they go down as a force de majeure, an act of God. But like that ability to kind of receive it is much different for a lot of people. And like, it seems like we're more and more just trying to blame somebody rather than actually realizing like an accident, accidents happen and they're tragedies. And sometimes the biggest tragedy of a tragedy is what happens afterwards and the blaming and the tragedies that happen on top of it. You know,
well, I think that's part of what makes livestock unique though too. I think when you're taking it seriously and you have those things that happen that are beyond your control, those also are a driver of change, right?
Mm-hmm. So and learning.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think
because we're able to balance that, like you don't just go off and brush it off like it just happens.
Yeah.
Like right. No, you actually take it seriously. You recognize it happens, but you don't blame anybody. You get better yourself.
Right.
How can I better prepare? What can I do to make this make more sense? And
right, right.
Do I need to cut my drains bigger? Do I need to build right. shelters in other spots? Do I need to plant some trees in some places? Like, what do I do to make it better?
I had a conversation this week with a producer up here who's concerned about, this happens to be goats, but concerned about body condition in his does. You know, he could say, well, it's just the year it is. What he's actually doing is figuring out what the feed's lacking and he's going to address it. And I think that's one of the reasons, even at a very small scale, I want to have sheep around because they teach me lessons.
I would tell him wait 2 weeks because we're supposed to get 70 degree weather next week and that feed's going to get strong.
Yeah, exactly. Part of it's just kind of knowing what's ahead too.
Yeah. Right? Point well taken though. It's very true. Like you gotta, that's that learning. That's that honest awareness.
Yeah.
That's that trying to actually be effective and like, and not be a passive recipient of everything that's happening. Right. Like be an active participant in the reality of what's going on.
Yeah.
You have to be so real with yourself in farming and ag. You can't lie. Like you lie to yourself and man, you get,
sheep don't lie. The sheep don't lie.
No, nature doesn't lie.
No.
That's what's so frustrating when you go to these different meetings with environmentalists that have an equal say at the table with different farmers and things that live and breed that stuff. Because they'll say something and everybody in the room that lives it is like, that's ridiculous. It's not true. That doesn't work. And because they have degrees and things, they're able to influence things in a way and make these just flat dumb decisions that end in disaster, preventable disasters, but nobody's able to articulate it and point it out. And it's just, it's really disheartening.
I always love going to meetings with our friend, our mutual friend, Joe Fisher.
Yeah.
Because he'll at some point very politely but effectively point out that almost everybody else in the room is getting paid to be there.
Yep.
And Joe, as a rancher, is taking time away from what pays him.
Yeah.
To participate in that. And I think that's, I think about that a lot with the folks I work with up here, you know?
Yeah. I mean, definitely when it comes to policy making and shaping, the voices at the table that are stakeholders, if you strip those stakeholder meetings out to people that were paid and unpaid, you'd have nobody at most meetings.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you wonder why bad things come out of those.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. Happened? Shocking. Yeah. Yeah.
So you got, looking ahead, I'm going to start lambing probably tomorrow or the next day.
Probably, yeah. Right now, actually.
Probably, yeah. It's going to wait till it starts to rain.
If the lambing gods have their way, it'll be when you're not there.
Absolutely. I'm headed to Reno this week for a
month. Yeah, yeah. No, it's happening for sure.
They're going to be 90% done by the time I get home.
Yep.
What do you got going on this next year? Finishing marking calves.
Yeah, we finished Brandon today. We're going to start weaning in February, weaning lambs. And our fiscal year-end turnover is March 1. So we're just starting to get knee-deep in 2024-25 budget and planning for next year. And then, yeah, we have all these changes in our community and everything. And so we're also kind of budgeting and planning all that stuff too. And the other part of that, the big part of that is, and this has nothing to do with the land purchases, the wages is a major thing. We got bumped up again and it's pretty substantial and it's not good.
That I think is something hitting lots of people right now. The reality,
our wages have doubled in 5 years.
And the land market hasn't doubled in 5 years, has it?
No. Nope. So it's just, yeah, that's a challenge. And then, I mean, California, it's all like of a, everything, economies are so dynamic, you know, all these little things play together, but just like the fuel prices, we've had a ton of fuel tax increases.
Yeah.
And those are starting to affect the fuel prices. They affect the fuel prices. But when the price is up and it's $6 a gallon for everybody and your taxes are $1.50, it's like, well, that's, you know, whatever that is, it's 15%, 20%. But when you're down to, you know, $4 diesel or $3 diesel and $1.50 of that's going to taxes, it's like you're up to now 30% of that fuel tax is just taxes going back. And that puts you at a severe disadvantage locally to do things in California. So you're, you know, hay coming in out of Nevada is too expensive. Shipping things in from shipping lambs or cattle in is too expensive. Shipping corn in is too expensive. Everything just gets so out of whack in the corn market, they call it the basis. It's the freight difference. Freight, basically, it's the freight from Iowa to wherever you're at.
Right.
And that gets pretty totally wild.
Whack. Yeah. 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 Right. Any you guys do a strategic plan kind of update every year, at least sit down and think about budgets and kind of where you're headed, right?
Yeah, we do. We usually try to tie it with like an ASI or one of those, but I couldn't go to ASI this year because my grandma's funeral was while that was happening. And then I missed the wool council meeting that I've involved in, and I was all fired up because we had some big things to talk about. And then I was like, oh, I'm not going. So apologies for that. But yeah, it was, so we do, last year we went to the Cattlemen's Convention and had our meetings in New Orleans, which was really cool.
Yeah.
But this year we're going to just lock ourselves indoors and we're going to work at the office. We got yesterday was day one, then we got day two in 2 weeks, and then day three in another week and a half after that, 2 weeks. So every other Thursday for three meetings.
I think that's another piece of dealing with change that is kind of underappreciated, but being intentional about where you are and where you want to head is a really important aspect of coping with change, I think, too.
Yeah. And you have to develop a structure that you're willing to change as right. you go to, because that's the biggest struggle. I mean, we run into that with our banker all the time, because you know they want to bank a dairy where it's fixed in, fixed out, this much volume, here's the for prices, you know, and it's pretty right. scheduled. Whereas because of especially our feeder stocker operations, you know, we might buy $10 million in lambs or $10 million in cattle or none.
Or none. Yeah. Like, right.
So it's really hard to, it's really hard to sit here in February and say, well, based on the market projections for the sheep industry, August 2024, I mean, yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
And good luck figuring out that volatility.
What kind of grass we're going to have next fall.
So you have to build something that's, it's a set of rules, it's a focus, it's a guiding principle, but then you're also willing to take advantage of opportunities as they come up. So, I mean,
that you just said guiding principle. I think that is so important. It's not guiding principle does not mean you're everything set in stone, but
this last year we had our budget beginning of the year in February. We ended up buying 3,000 ewes in June.
Yeah.
That wasn't in the budget.
Right.
But we did
Right.
You know, and so, and then it ended up, and it worked in the structure of the budget that we built, though. That's the important thing. So there's things that get off because everything gets off, but it worked within the structure of what we were doing.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I got a.
We're coming up on an hour. Thank you.
I know. I got a. My banker actually is going to come by and pick me up because we're going to go to they have a little men's club in town that I don't belong to, but I get invited to every once in a while. They're having they're having a crab lunch today. So
nice.
Yeah. So I'm supposed to go there here in about 10 minutes. So yeah.
Well, I'm going to go Sunday. I got to go to Reno for this meeting.
Yeah.
And the girls and I are going to Louie's. We have a date.
Get the sweetbreads, huh?
Yep. Yeah.
Those are my favorite. They got the best sweetbreads there.
And cold red wine.
Oh man. Yeah. it's great trouble, man. Yeah, it is so good to see you, Dan. I really am glad we were able to sit down podcast, because I've been looking forward to talking to you, and it's been too long. And I've been meaning to try to get up there, because you've definitely been on my list of folks to talk to, and Auburn's just far enough away where it's hard to carve out that much time in a day.
Well, same
for you coming this way. So it's not all my fault. But.
Exactly. When we're done lambing, we're going to fix that. I'll be there.
Yeah, we'll be making it happen. So,
yeah.
But anyway, we were planning on seeing you at ASI, but I missed it. So I bailed on that
There'll be more. There'll be more.
There will indeed, sir. Well, so.
Well, this is Sheep Stuff You Should Know. Dan Makin at the Auburn Cooperative Extension Office and Mental Health Facility. And Ryan Mahoney at Amy Tower One. Are you in Tower One or Tower Two?
Tower One.
Okay. Okay.
Tower One. I only have one tower now. Sold the other one.
That's change.
Oh, man. Yeah, it is. All right. See
you. Have a great weekend.
Yeah.